Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. I'm sorry, I missed the last couple of weeks. I'm sorry. I don't even have an excuse other than, you know, I made a big mistake getting really organized a while ago and, like, you know, banking a ton of episodes. And I was just way ahead of everything. And then I was out of the loop of staying on top of things. And then suddenly I just got jammed up. Sort of, you know, my life was changing to summertime. And I was doing a lot of driving back and forth from West Hampton to the city, doing a ton of spots. And I just kind of, I got to admit, my focus came off the pod a little bit. And I apologize. Just a little bit of an adjustment period. I had to get my mind back in the game. So we're back. I have an episode. We have a great episode coming up. And I have somebody lined up for next week. So today we have Ashley Gavin, amazing comic. She talks about a comic based in New York. She talks about coming out and, you know, just being a gay comic. And also we talk at the end of the episode about first openly active footballer coming out as gay, American footballer. And we have a lot of fun on the episode. Also, super interesting, she talks about being the first openly gay comedian on a Carnival cruise line. And she's got some funny stories about that. It's a really good ep. Next week, we're going to have Mark Hayes, who is a Cork comedian that lives in L.A. that I didn't know about. And then suddenly I saw him on Chris DiStefano's story, and I was like, wait a minute. How is there a fucking guy from Cork doing comedy in L.A.? I've never heard about him. So I immediately reached out, and he's going to be on the on the pod next week. I will say, though, that I haven't been keeping up the Patreon. And this is not a plea to get people to subscribe to the Patreon, but I haven't been completely lazy. You know, there is a thing about having subscribers, you know, that pay, that just keeps you focused. And, you know, the Patreon is... I'm not even really pushing you to subscribe to the Patreon, but it's a very specific thing, and some people like it. It's very sort of like involved, you know, people commenting and stuff, but it is good fun. So that has been going. So if that is your bag, you know, sort of like helping to drive the conversation by commenting, patreon.com/Des Bishop. It's only a fiver a month, and there's at least two episodes a week. It's supposed to be three, but there's always at least two, and I give a heads up when they're coming up. In the summer, they haven't been as on schedule because my summer schedule is a bit more all over the place. But needless to say, enough of me making excuses for myself. It's just a straight up apology. I missed 2 weeks and I know that, but we got a really fun, interesting episode coming up to make up for it. Don't forget to hit me up in the DMs at Des Bishop. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Take a screenshot of Spotify where all the energy and the money is shifting. And just let the people know that the Des Bishop Podcast is still going and it's still great fun. And we'll be back at the end of the episode. Here is Ashley Gavin, and I'll talk to you after the app. Ashley Gavin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You know, like so many of, like, I'm not a great guest booker, you know? And like so many of my guests.
Thank you. What a way to introduce me.
Well, what I didn't mean in terms of I'm not booking great guests. What I mean is I'm not very organized. And so you're another guest that has now, like, I've happened upon, like, jumped into my lap. No, like, not in the obvious sense. But we were just having a chat on a boat and I was like, hey, you want to be on my pod?
Yeah, and as white people do, we were networking on a boat, and we hit it off, and now we're networking on a podcast.
Which is fair enough, because it was the party of podcasting people, so it would make sense that you would have a podcast connection.
That's true. Everyone on that boat had a pod. It was a pod boat.
Yeah, it was
boat cast.
It was very much a podcast party. Now, because of my crappy Wi-Fi, we have a bit of a delay, but don't let that get you down. We'll just ignore it, and if we interrupt each other, that's fine. So I've gotten to know you through Hannah. You opened up for Hannah at the show that we did. Beyond that, I don't know that much. This is going to be one of these pods where I need to have this podcast to learn more about you. So just a bit, like, when you were growing up, like, what age were you when you knew, oh, I've got a little bit different going on?
Oh.
Well, sorry, different, incorrect word.
I think I started...
I guess at that time in your life where you thought, oh, shit.
No, I mean, we are not the statistical, you know, norm. It is different. I think I started fearing that I was gay in like seventh grade, and then like full blown just absolute love for my first like crush in like eighth grade.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I was secretly hooking up with her and another girl throughout high school. And I think the whole time I just was really hoping I would end up being bi, and so that I could avoid the entire thing. And I kept thinking, like, no, I'll just meet a guy and I'll be bi and I'll just settle on the guy and it'll be fine. And then that just never happened. It just, I'm very gay. Like, it is not a spectrum for me at all. Like, gay. So yeah, that was tough. It was tough.
Cause that's like, was that feeling based on like, this is just going to be a major pain in the ass. Like, it's just easier to not be like this.
Yes, honestly, yes. Because I was just so afraid of the ramifications it would have on my life, which is interesting. Like, I guess I had the typical self-loathing as well. But I think the fact that I was like, well, as long as you're bi, you can just like kind of like settle into this. I was just very much trying to avoid it because of coming out. I just didn't want to have to deal. It is so annoying and it is so emotionally intense that you just wish you could make it go away. Like any other problem in your life, you kind of like are like, okay, well, what could I do? Oh, I could fall in love with a guy. And there were like guys that I like tried to have feelings for, like genuinely attempted to make myself like them, and it you know, obviously it didn't. How do you do that? How do you make yourself attracted to somebody? You can't. It's just like instantaneous. It's like magic. It's totally uncontrollable. So those were some awkward encounters. But like, I've never seriously dated a guy. Also, I can't make men like me. Like, if men like me, they're usually like, that's always like a very weird dude. Most men know that this is not like something that they should get involved with. But yeah.
But like, you grew up in New York City?
Mm-mm, yeah.
Like on the island of Manhattan?
Yeah, I grew up like in Yorkville, like, oh, yeah, right below Harlem, above.
Yeah,
the,
I know. That was my mother's first address before, but she moved out to Queens like when she was very young. But how accepting by the time you were in like late grammar school, early high school, how much of an atmosphere of openness was there?
I think people knew gay people and were like fine with it, but there was still the kids in my class. Like, there was, I'm working on a joke about this.
Yeah, yeah. This podcast is at my favorite when it's workshopping jokes.
Okay, cool. So the one of the ways that you find out that you're gay, like really find out that you're gay, is like in health class, there's that talk, you know, around seventh grade, they're doing sex ed, anatomy, biology, whatever. And they get to the point where they're in the curriculum, they're just like, oh yeah, by the way, there are gay people. And it's like totally cool and normal. And like 1 in 10 or 20 people are gay. And that's like totally fine. And then that's like the worst thing you could possibly say to a group of exactly 10 or 20 children, because then everyone starts scanning the room looking for the person who will is the, you know, the needle in the haystack or whatever. And then all of a sudden everyone's looking at you and you're like, well, great. I'm fucking gay. I guess I'm gay. And you all know that I'm gay. And because like that's what happened. That's exactly what happened to me. Like at that point, everyone just kind of looks at you and you're like, well, fuck, like.
It's
no,
me. I'm it.
Please. <It's> like, yeah, exactly. Can we move on? I don't want to talk about this.
But I mean, in a way, that's kind of good because if everybody goes, it's Ashley, then you go, oh, I guess what I was feeling is correct because they know it too.
Right. But it's not the confusion. It's the reality of it, especially because no one wants to be that person. Because as soon as you look at someone else, they'll be, I'm not fucking gay. It's never like, oh, you know, like being gay could be cool, but I don't think that I'm gay. But maybe it's always like, I'm not fucking gay. You know, like,
but
it's
but
not
obviously,
a positive. It's a negative. It's a negative thing.
Yeah. At that time, you feel it's a negative, right? But the other thing that you probably didn't factor into that, well, you probably did, but you weren't the only one there. I bet you.
Of course, but you feel so alone. I think about like how awesome my life is as who I am now, and I'm so glad I'm not straight. There needs to be like a gay coach that comes into every school and is like, okay, like you guys are making fun of gay people, but here's a list of reasons why it's actually better to be gay. And then they just like go through all, you only hear about the struggle. You don't ever hear about like, you don't ever hear about sharing a wardrobe. I get to share a wardrobe with the person that I date. Do you know how convenient that is? That I can just like put on her clothes if I want to.
But that's very, you know? That's very, and, like, I don't, it's very restricting in terms of like, then you have to like meet somebody and be like, oh, but she's too large. I'm big into sharing.
Right.
Yeah. I'm big into sharing clothes. This is not practical.
But you have that option. You also, like, you being gay is cool because, like, you share, like, this very cool childhood trauma level connection with everyone that you ever date. When you're gay, you have a fundamental shared trauma and, like, fundamental life experiences in common with each other that, like, straight people, no offense or anything, you just, like, don't have that. And, or, you can't just automatically find it. You're usually politically aligned. You're usually like socially aligned. Like that's a great, great perk to being gay that no one talks
about.
Yes,
but you would assume that some of those perks eventually are going to disappear. That would be the hope, right? That you won't be bound by trauma.
Right. That one day we have, right. One day that we have no trauma and there are gay Republicans and that's like a total.
I mean, there are the log cabin Republicans. But they're like a special group. But the problem is that I'm 45 now, so like they didn't talk about I was aware of gay guys and I knew gay was a thing and I definitely made homophobic jokes and called people gay and dumb shit that, you know, young men do and they're fucking clueless. But I definitely don't remember when we were having the talk, sex education talk. I don't remember the teachers openly being like, and some of you might be gay. I don't think so. So I know that things have changed
really?
A lot since. Yeah, no. Well, I don't remember, but this was like 1987, 88. I mean, they were still saying that.
Yeah,
AIDS,
it might have been.
They were still saying
like,
AIDS was like created to fucking punish gays.
Kill gay people.
Yeah, you know. But anyway, what I am saying is, that in the interim, but like by the time you were in seventh grade, they were just kind of being like, hey, and some of you are gay and that's fine. I wonder where it's at now because I don't know. I wonder, have they gotten to the stage where they're like, and, you know, this is, you know, in terms of like, you know, questions around sexual health or whatever you say to kids at certain ages, I wonder at some stage, do they then say these are the different ways that people explore? Like, I wonder all these ways that people express themselves sexually just get increasingly normalized to the point where nothing about it seems odd.
Yeah, I hope so. I feel like kids are coming out earlier and earlier and schools are the trend is upward, that schools are doing a better job with like students that come out. But there are also schools where they do like a very, you're always hearing on the news that some school banned a gay couple from going to prom.
Oh, really?
Every time that happens, I'm like, they still do. I'm like, have you guys not watched the new, like this happens every year. Every year, some gay couple can't go to prom. And every year the school has to issue a huge apology on like the news and like, just stop, just let them fucking go to prom at the bare minimum, just to avoid the bad press conference.
Surely that's in like real heavily Christian areas, right?
For sure. For sure. This is all, I grew up in New York City. I'm not even sure that in rural Christian towns that they're talking about gay people at all in sex ed. So it's the disparity is enormous.
So because I was talking to Emma Willman recently, and we were just talking about all aspects of comedy and identity and, you know, what's cool to say, what's not cool to say. But when you started doing comedy, did you make a decision that you were going to like, very much go on your identity? Were you going to try to avoid it? Did you have any thoughts about it when you got on stage originally?
My general thought is like, funny is funny. I don't care if a comedian does 15 minutes on one topic. If they're making everybody laugh, what does it fucking matter what they're talking about, as long as it's like interesting? That's my personal perspective when I watch comedians. I like, my only thoughts about my own identity are that I get a lot of shit about doing my gay shit up front. I've actually talked to Emma about this specifically. I do my gay shit up front because, and you know, in New York, sometimes you only get a 10-minute set, right? Like, so like the first 5 or 6 minutes are gay, let's say. And then I'll, you know, do another 5 minutes of something else. I like to get the gay shit out of the way because I've noticed that audiences somehow are just warmer after it. If I like reverse the order, it's almost like I haven't come out to them. And so they're just, I don't think they're actively thinking about it, but I think there's just some sort of like discomfort, almost like I'm not my full self to them yet. And so they just need to hear it. They just, once they hear it, then all the other jokes work better, even though they have nothing to do with being gay. It just fleshes me out for them as a human
being.
But
like, that, when you say that, it sounds to me like there's this assumption that they're looking at you going, when is this bitch going to tell us that she's gay? Because it's clear as day. But
I don't think that they're thinking that. But I think subconsciously that is
really, that's interesting. Cause I mean, like, I mean, obviously there's certain stereotypes, but I knew you were gay when I met you, but I can't,
yes,
because I knew though, but like, I can't think that an audience is seeing you and like waiting for you to say you're gay. Like, I know you say it's subconscious, but do you think maybe that, that's like in your mind, like you've gotten used to just getting it out of the way
right,
early?
For sure. That is totally a fair question, and I have tried it. I could try it more. I could really be totally dedicated to the task of like doing all of my other material first and doing a formal scientific experiment. But I've done it, I think, as a comedian enough times where I feel like, no, it's just better to get it out of the way. Leslie Jones wrote like, about addressing her height and her like aggression in the beginning of her set, or maybe it was an interview with her. I can't remember, but I totally related to it because it's almost like if there's something weird about you, and I use that term weird loosely, I feel like you kind of just have to, in comedy, you don't want people like thinking too much. You just want them in the moment and present. And that's what I think my opening with the gay stuff does. Even if it's only two jokes, I think it just really
helps.
Because
both you and Emma. But I also think probably more women feel like they need to address something up front to get it out of the way. Which I think there's some there's some gender stuff in terms of crowd expectations of people too, which is I think a hurdle slash obstacle that women have to deal with. That's not all men, but some men deal with. I'm sure a lot of gay male comics think the same thing. They need to address it to get out of the way. But I feel like that is an obstacle that's not fair. I mean, obviously, you know that you're dealing in reality, so you do what's best for you. But isn't that kind of annoying?
I think it is annoying, but I only think the annoying part of it is how people react to it. I can't prevent how crowds are gonna have a group think. Mm. I can't change a group think other than by being funny. But I wish comedians, particularly kind of newer, younger comedians, wouldn't keep saying to me, "Have you thought about not doing the gay stuff till later?" Yeah, I fucking thought about not doing the gay stuff till later. Yes, I think about all of these things. I just wish they didn't assume I was stupid. of course I've thought about it. I am a I'm a gay carnival cruise comedian. I have dealt with homophobia on stage more than probably most gay comedians have. I've thought about accommodating them, but it turns out that's actually not the most helpful thing to do.
And do you ever get a sense?
Sorry,
of,
I went off there.
It was great. I mean, the Zoom call that we're on is so crappy that your audio was fine, but you were in slow motion, which made it more dramatic. But no, that's great. Just the last question I'll ask about that, and actually I do want to talk to you about the carnival. I actually have loads of more questions, but do you ever feel when you tried to do it reverse, that a crowd were like, "Oh, wait a minute, she didn't let us know. That's not cool."
You duped them. I have a joke that I say when I get on stage where I go, "Hey, you know, how you doing?" or whatever. And then I go, usually the first words out of my mouth after that are, "I'm gay. You can stop thinking about it." And it gets a big pop. And that's why I say no one's actively thinking about it, but everyone is thinking about it. And I recently was playing around with where to put that. And if I put it after just some other joke that I do, some opening joke, it gets a much bigger pop if I do it two or three later in the set. But those first jokes are then disadvantaged. It's which one do I want to suffer? Do I want those first couple jokes to really pop, so I'll put them later? But it sort of proved to me that I was right.
Yeah.
That something is going on a subconscious level.
Plus, you know, it's a great...
I forget what your question was. Oh, do they feel duped?
Oh, that was just... I'm kind of half joking around. No, I was half joking around, but half also wondering where this thing comes from, where if you say it later that it's that it's not the same. But actually, ignore that question, because I was half joking around. But but here's the thing about your opener. The thing is that it's also just from pure comedy writing slash rhythm. It's just a very good opener because it's very quick. It's very, it's concise.
It's super
funny.
Fast.
And it just establishes you immediately, but also connects you with them. So why wouldn't you open with that? Because that's really what you want. Like Mateo comes out and goes, "Hi,
right.
I'm obviously gay." And then boom, he has them. You know what I mean? And it's not just that he has them because he's established that he's gay. It's also super fucking funny because in five words, they're fucking dying laughing. You know, because the combination of his flamboyance, his image, and, the way that he presents that sentence, it's boom, he's got them. So why wouldn't you use the fucking 5-6 word line?
Right. Yeah. And I think sometimes he's so fucking funny and you just know exactly who he is from that interaction. And hopefully that's what I'm also doing with mine. Because I'm just I guess part of it is I am gay and I truly do not care what you think about it. That's sort of what I'm saying to them. And I think the only people who really care about it, I think, are people who feel almost at a, comedians, they're open mic level comedians who feel at a disadvantage that they don't have a thing to talk about right up front. They're not... you know, a certain color. They're not a certain sexuality. They're not a certain gender. They don't have an accent. They don't have this. They don't have that. And on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, I understand. I understand why that's frustrating. But you also don't have any of the other bullshit that we have to deal with that goes along with it. So, like, let's, like, it's like a fair trade.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, you definitely shouldn't pay attention to that. But I'm more interested in the fact that there are certain comedians that feel like they need to address something up front, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
So you did these carnival cruises, which we were chatting about on the boat, which I found fascinating. First of all, I think the whole cruise comedy world is fascinating on its own, and then you add in
it's weird.
Yeah, then you add in your identity being an issue sometimes, I guess. Actually, let's explain why I would say that your identity is an issue. So actually, by explaining about cruise comedy and clean and dirty shows, you can also then tell the audience about what they said to you.
Yeah, so
by the way, actually, before we say anything, are you allowed to speak about this in terms of that brand?
Technically, no, but I don't care. Okay. And I do, if you want to say budget, you can say budget. They're never going to find it. And even if they do, like, I'm in an incredibly powerful position as their only gay comedian coming out and saying these things, like, I don't care. Also, like, you need to know that it's carnival. Like, it's not Norwegian. It's not Royal Caribbean. It is carnival. And that is a very specific person. And a lot of those people have never met a gay person, like, in their life. They are either apolitical or, like, very conservative. And they just, like, they're not from my, I've never met people like this in my entire life. You know, I grew up in New York City. And, oh man, it's funny though, because I do love performing for a lot of them. I really do enjoy it.
So you got hired. Yeah, so you got hired to do, you got hired. Sorry. You said yes to doing cruise gigs because the money's decent and it was regular work, right?
The money is decent. It's good regular work. And when they got hired, like, I was nobody. I'm nobody now, but, like, I was truly nobody. Like, no one knew who I was. And I was just trying to make a living as a comedian and, like, doing colleges and stuff like that. So, of course, I was like, yeah. And, like, so what if it sucks? Like, it'll be a learning experience and whatever. Man, that no lie there. It's been a real learning experience. But I've come to really like it. On the PG shows, so there's R-rated shows and there's PG shows. On the PG shows, not only do you have to be totally, totally squeaky clean, I cannot say that I'm gay. So I can't even, like, say, oh, my girlfriend, this, that, or the other thing. Like, I have to exist as, like, an asexual blob, like, just, like, you know, this, like, sexless human. Other comedians get to joke about their husbands or their wives and things like that. I don't get that. It's just, like, straight up a half hour of observational comedy.
And they were comfortable. They were comfortable saying that to you, right? They was just like, listen, you know, on the PG show, don't talk about your sexuality.
Isn't that wild? Like, that's the part I should really be talking about, that I have not written an op-ed in the New York Times about someone saying to me. But I know why they said it, because as soon as, before, I was like, this is homophobic. And then I got on the boat and I was like, oh, but the people are more homophobic. Like, Carnival, that what Carnival said is not great, but they're trying to protect me from, they want my voice there on the R-rated show. They want me there. They're, like, very proud that I'm there. And that I, like, fully appreciate and I think is great. But they're basically, they protect me on the R-rated show. If someone leaves and it was like, that lady was gay, they're like, yeah, and it was the R-rated show. And, like,
and deal with it.
You went in, yeah, deal with it. So I understand why the PG show has to exist for their clients. And I really hope one day, like, I've slipped up and, like, said the wrong gender on the PG show. I try to use they, them pronouns whenever I'm doing, like, relationship material on the PG show, which is very difficult to sort of refer to people who have a certain gender in your life and change their gender for a joke and then go back and say it the other way when you're off the boat. It's like really a strange experience. But one time I messed up and I remember thinking, just keep going and see if anything happens.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened. I mean, I would think more often than not, nothing would happen. But I guess, I mean, I'm certainly not defending Carnival, but I assume that it just comes from just not wanting the hassle, you know?
They are going to have parents. The whole thing is that there are kids at the show. And there are parents who are going to have to explain concepts to their children based on what they hear at the show. And so what I've ended up doing is I just use innuendo. Like, I refer to Ellen in my set, my PG set, like, three times. Just to, like, get the message across.
Of, you, like, you and Ellen have something in common.
Exactly. I won't, like, do the whole bit, but I'm like, yeah, that, like that, yeah. And then if they get it, they get it, and if they don't, they don't. And I find that that helps my... It's so weird. Like, that helps everyone loosen up, too. Because it almost feels like... It's weird because people will tell you not to make a big deal about being gay and tell you to stop talking about it. But then when you don't talk about it, like, people just kind of look at you like they don't know something about you and they're like waiting
but
to
like,
find
who
out.
Says don't talk, who
it's
says
weird
don't
line.
Talk about it?
Oh, like my Aunt Robin.
I just find it fascinating how anybody would advise a gay comic to not talk about it, because no matter how much some fucking idiot says, oh, why do you have to talk about being gay? The other comic is not talking about. And it's like, well, first of all, we really are in the minority. Why would I not fucking take the biggest part of my life and talk about it when a much smaller amount of comedians are talking about? Most comedians actually end up talking about the same shit. And even though a lot of gay comics talk about being gay, there's still so fucking few of us. Why the fuck would we not talk about it?
Totally. And also, like, every time, just like for the listener, if it's not clear, like every time a straight comedian complains about his wife, that is a straight joke. That's a straight joke. Like, and also when you're gay, there are certain topics that feel gayer because I'm gay. Like if I talk about feminism, that has like a, there's no gay in it, but like it feels gayer. There's all kinds of stuff, but the first time I was on TV, I was so proud. I did Live at Gotham. This is like 5 years
this
ago.
This shows a real career Gotham. Progression. Live at Gotham, you know? that was a big moment.
It 5 years ago, this was the biggest deal.
It's actually,
this was
it's actually
a
great show. I did that, and I got like a lot of... I ended up actually like... dating this like a girl like through fandom of when she saw me on feckin' Live at Gotham.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm joking.
That's
around.
Cool.
But Axis TV is, you know, that you'll look back at the time when you were excited about being on Mark Cuban's channel.
I know. And now I'm like, it's so funny because like Amy Schumer wrote about doing it in her book and like the way that she wrote about it. That's how I felt.
Cool.
But now I know it did absolutely nothing for like my career. But I mean, I guess it made me look a little more legitimate at the time. But I emailed my whole family and I was like, hey, everyone, like I'm going to be on TV and this is how you can watch and blah, blah, blah. And my cousin just wrote me back and was like, hey, like, enjoyed it, but like, here are my notes. And one of the notes was basically, do you have to do the gay angle so much? And it was just so sad. I was just like so sad. Like I was trying to share this like moment with them, and it and his daughter is gay now, just as a point of karma for this whole thing. But and his sister. These are my two gay cousins. But it really sucked.
Yeah. I mean, people make dumb comments all the time on what you should and shouldn't talk about. But when it comes to your identity, that hurts a little deeper. Like people will say to me, do you have to do the dirty stuff? Do you have to say fuck so much? But like if somebody said to me, do you have to do the white Irish American guy stuff so much? I'd be like, well, actually, the Irish always do that. They always say to me, like, is he still doing the American living in Ireland thing? It's like, you mean, is he still himself? Like, is he still the American that lives in Ireland? I guess he is. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, he's still doing the gay stuff. It's like, well, I'm still gay. Like, I'm still talking about myself.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But I think what you're getting at with like the cursing and the dirtiness, it's like, okay, so you don't like it, but it's not an affront on you. Like, you don't have to like the cursing. You don't have to like the dirty stuff. You can like a different comedian, but it's because it's in direct conflict with their like sense of morality.
Yes, of
that
course.
That it gets them.
Yeah, and you're...
It has nothing to do with how funny it is.
Yeah, so I mean, I deal with that sometimes in terms of like people's shame around sex, and I'm very open about sex, and that some people can't handle that, and they try to make me feel bad about it. But at the same time, I feel like it cuts a little deeper when not only... In certain situations, people are throwing onto you. Not only do they not want you talking about sex, but they would prefer if you weren't what you are. I was just going to say that. No, I felt like you got my point already, so I didn't need to finish it.
Yeah, I mean the gay thing on Carnival is tough because it implies that being gay just is a dirty
that's what
joke.
I mean,
like, I have plenty of gay material that's like not at all dirty, like the squeakiest. It's actually very clean material, but so it's weird to be told that that is somehow not okay for a child to hear. It's that does cut a certain
yeah,
way.
Because like if a 12-year-old is at the show and you're talking about any sexual stuff, any sexual preference, man, woman, whatever, and it's quite graphic, that's just unsuitable for them because they're not there yet. But to tell a 12-year-old some people like the same sex and some people don't, that is PG, actually. It's very PG.
Right. Yeah. And age appropriate, like for those kids, you know what I mean? Because they're already thinking about it. No one ever thinks about, that's the other thing, no one ever thinks about the closeted gay kid that needs
very
that
good
comedian
point. Very good
to
point.
Say
and,
something. No one ever thinks about
that. Yeah, and
that
you see a lot of people talk about, you know, like, you know, celebrities when they come out, they tell the story of coming out, and often they'll say, I was very moved when this person came out, that person came out, when I heard a joke about, when I heard a song. You know, they're moved by these, you know. So, of course, you could change somebody's life if they're sitting on the Carnival cruise, you know.
Absolutely.
And they want to be at absolutely the drag show rather than the...
Right. Yeah. And I've gotten messages on TikTok from kids that are like, you were my cruise comedian. And then they like love my TikToks, which are not cruise like clean at all, you know. So it's interesting. It's been an interesting experience. And people shit on, I just want to say, like, people shit on cruise comedians, but there are some of us, I don't change my material when I get on the boat. Like, I'm not dumbing this shit down. There are lots of cruise comedians that are not good, but then there are also the guys that are trying to bring something to the table at these things.
Yeah, so I'm fascinated by that world of cruise comedy because there is a, because I, you know, I've done coincidentally enough, the Comedy Cellar in Vegas, and then Aruba Ray runs a show in Aruba. They both, yes, they have that middle America kind of audience that's just very different to the New York audience, which some people who've done both cruise shows and these shows have said kind of like a cruise crowd, in that you kind of have to appeal to everybody, yeah, really, which is, you know, that's, it's not an insult to the crowd, but it is what it is. Like, these people are going to comedy because they're on the cruise. They're not really, yeah, going to comedy because they love comedy. You know, some of them, you know, like,
right,
some of them are,
right,
just like, hey, fuck it, let's comedy on, yeah, Tuesday. You know, they sign up for it and they go. So I mean, it is a fascinating world. I have to think, as a comedy exercise, it must be very good for your development that you can go out there and find a way to appeal to these people with the same jokes.
Yes, that was the biggest learning curve, because I was not going to write new material, because also I am not capable of writing that material. When I watch these guys do, there's this dude that does, like, I'm not going to say his name, but during the clean show, he does, like, you like big dogs or you like little dogs? And then he does big dog versus little dog jokes. And I, you know, want to walk off the deck when I hear it, because he's so good at it. He's so good at writing the big dogs versus little dogs. And I cannot wrap my brain around. I'm trying to write about the Confederate statues that are up right now. I could never do this on a cruise, the Confederate statues jokes on a cruise. Like, that's, like, crazy. You could never do that. But so when I got there, I was like, I have to find a way to be myself. I just have to. And what it ended up doing was just making me just dramatically more confident in my material. Because at first I got up there and I was scared. I was genuinely frightened that I, like, couldn't connect with these people. And then once I did the first cruise, where I got, the first cruise was one of the worst experiences of my life. Once I got through that, I called my mother crying. I was like, Mom, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this job, like, effectively. And when you call your mom crying on the boat, that's the most expensive call that you could possibly make. You're in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. It's not a cheap call to call your mother crying at this point. And my mom, you know, my mom is so not the mom who's like, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. My mom was like, how do you get home? Can you leave from Mexico? Book a flight. I'll pay for it. Just get here. She, like, really didn't want me to have to go through this. And then I kind of got over it. And at the second cruise, I was so upset. I had just given up. I thought, I'm never going to do this again. So I might as well just, like, do what I want to do. And it was that made it better. I just didn't care what they thought. Like, because I'll say I'm gay at the top of a set, and I tried all the different ways, you know, but people will stand up and just walk out as soon as they hear that. And to be confronted with that as a comedian, you're like, I didn't even bomb yet. You didn't even give me a chance to bomb. Like, that's the setup. That's not even the punchline. Like, please just wait for the rest of the joke. But when you like have that level of hatred from someone, it's freeing, because you're like, oh, like, this is going to be horrible. So I might as well just do exactly what I want to do. And that's what ended up making me better. I just had total disregard for everybody and this, like, renewed sense of self that I didn't care what people thought of me. And then the jokes all started working. Like, no changes to the jokes, just a complete change in attitude. And then, and then I just kept going. And now I have much more confidence as a performer. I mean, it was a really incredible experience.
But I also think it's just tough, regardless of all the horrible shit that you had to deal with in terms of people walking out. I think it just takes time to adjust to doing a show like a cruise show. I think it just takes time to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it took...
Yeah, they're also slower.
Yeah, but it took comedians time to figure out how to work social distance. You know, it does take time to adjust. So it's no surprise if you're used to working in New York, suddenly you're on a Carnival cruise. You know, like, that's a tough adjustment. But it is also tough to watch people walk out. But the funny thing about people walking out, which we've all had, but I've never had it where somebody was just like, oh, he's him, so I'm walking out. I mean, they've not liked something I said, but they never sort of walked out on my identity. But even as horrible as that is, it's so funny because one or two people will walk out and you'll think, like, oh my God, people are walking out. And it's literally one
like 0.001 of the audience, and it's irrelevant. And they don't have to pay extra, right? They're just there. But it just fucks with your head the whole time.
It really, it's a horrible feeling. And usually it has nothing to do with
you. Yeah, they might have actually like just sat down and been like, fuck, I have diarrhea.
Right, exactly. There's the chance that this is literally not even comedy related. And then if it is comedy related, it's usually not your fault. Like maybe they heard a joke about something that upsets them for some reason. That has nothing to do with you. That's a them problem. And then, you know, you go down the list of things. And then finally at the very bottom, there's, you know, homophobia on the cruise out of Texas on Thanksgiving. You know, like, okay, all right. But that's usually the last. That's usually the last.
Do you ever do jokes about cruise comedy in the city?
Yeah, I think I told you one on the boat. I just say they don't allow me to be gay, so I wrote some straight jokes if you guys want to hear one. And everyone goes, yeah. And I go, okay, I'm straight now. Okay. The other day I was eating my boyfriend's pussy
I was thinking it would be fun. You know, I don't know if you're going to do any more cruises, but it would be fun just as a stupid exercise at the PG show to just make up a whole new identity for yourself and see if you could write like married people material, like my fucking husband.
I've thought about it. I've truly thought about having an alter ego. Hey, I'm Diane. I love, jerking off my husband.
But you can't do that because it's the PG show.
Right, so
you
don't have that. This is the PG show.
No, but I just think it'd be funny, you know.
But it would be, I don't know, could be fun.
Well, only because I was actually thinking that there must be tons of hack jokes that lesbian comedians do. Because I was thinking about it when you were saying about the convenience of being a lesbian, you know, trying on clothes and different things, but also the convenience of not living with a man. I mean, the first thing I thought of is like a lot less pee on the bathroom floor. But I got to imagine that there's a ton of probably well-worn jokes about the inconvenience of men and the convenience of being with a woman. I have to think that that's a joke that's been written.
I feel like straight women have that under control.
Oh, right,
control,
yeah, I guess.
I feel like straight women are really dominating
the inconvenience
of men. I don't want to step on their turf. That's their trauma that they need to go through, and I'm very respectful of their process.
Although that is a good title for a show, The Inconvenience of Men.
Yeah, that is. It does sound like a Handmaid's Tale reboot.
Yeah. The Inconvenience of Men. Well, you know, just because like when you do Edinburgh, you have to come up with like a good title of your show. Male Inconvenience. Anyway, ignore me. Well, that was great.
No, you're good.
That was great. I sometimes I'm not sure if it's cool or not, because I've had three, four. I've had a lot of gay comics on recently, and I'm ashamed at how little I really know about the struggles, you know. And I feel like, you know, even though I'm friends with a lot of gay comics, I think when you're on a podcast, you then naturally just get a little deeper. But then I'm also paranoid. I'm also paranoid of grilling people about the inconvenience of being gay. Coincidentally enough. I'm wondering is that okay?
Of course. I can't speak for everybody, but like I have also really put myself out there as a gay person because, you know, my podcast is called We're Having Gay Sex, and I know people look at me and think because of this, despite all the other material that I have and what I've been doing for years in stand-up, choosing this path of talking about these issues has really helped my career, because there are so many people out there who have the questions that you have and need more gay representation. So I am like totally 100%. I will talk about my gay struggles all day long.
All right, yeah.
As long as people don't also assume that there's nothing else that I talk about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the only thing that I ask when people listen to my stuff, that I feel like it is I finally have come around and accepted that this is a service that I am providing, and I'm happy to provide it. You know, I'm happy to be that person.
What, what was your motivation or what was the goal of having gay sex when you started it? Because obviously there's other gay podcasts and different things. What were you hoping to achieve with the pod?
Entirely personal. Entirely. Dude, I have like done everything. I have like done cruises in colleges. I pitched, you know, scripted, unscripted. I made a web series. I taped all these things. My career was just not doing fucking anything. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll do a podcast if I have a good idea. But I don't want to do one unless I have a good idea. And then I'd gone through this breakup and I was kind of being a whore and very excited to do that because I had never done that before. I've been in like back-to-back serial monogamy relationships. So finally I was like, I'm like going to hoe around. And then I thought to myself, there are so many podcasts about women hoeing around, like great sex positive feminist podcasts. And then I thought there is not a single one like that for gay people. There's no gay people hoeing around, and gay sex is such a taboo topic. Like no one wants to talk about it. And so that's when I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just like do this from my perspective. And I just want to get an agent. That was like that was all I wanted. I did not expect the, you know, I sound arrogant right now, but I did not. I had no idea what a force it would be for so many people. They write in and they're like, oh, it came out because of your podcast. And I'm like, why would you do that? That should be a personal decision that I have nothing to do with.
Yeah.
You know, like I talk about putting my finger in my girlfriend's butt and that makes them want to come out. Sure, fine. That's great. But yeah, so it's like it's been wild. It's crazy. And I'm grateful. I'm very grateful for the whole thing. I'm so glad that it's happened.
That's great. I've brought that up on this pod actually with people about, I'm waiting and hoping for there to be more overtly gay sexual material, because I feel like that's still taboo. And the comedians that could do that material don't seem to be super comfortable doing it. And the audiences aren't comfortable hearing it. But that only changes by it being done.
Yeah. Well, I have some scissoring stuff for you, Des. I've got a lot of scissoring material. We can cover it today. We can cover it anytime.
Are you bringing that up because you're trying to test me on my ignorance? Because my understanding is that scissoring...
No!
My understanding is that scissoring is overrated in terms of it's heavily used in porn, but not heavily used in a lesbian relationship.
Would you like to... Do we have a moment? I can get into scissoring.
Well, yeah. I mean, I you know... According to Hannah, she came back from your podcast and she said you guys don't scissor that much.
Okay. So I don't think that scissoring is the primary form of sex for most lesbians, and the way that it's portrayed in heterosexual porn, meaning like lesbian porn made for heterosexual people, is incorrect. You are absolutely right on that end. But what I think is missing from the discourse on scissoring is that tribbing, or basically the friction play around the clitoris, is a huge part of lesbian sex, lesbian foreplay, and straight sex. So I have a bit about how every straight woman scissors. Like if she can only come on top, she's actually scissoring you and you don't even know that that is happening. So that's like what the bit is about, that, and we talk about things like this on the podcast all the time. Like, scissoring has been so poorly portrayed in porn that now lesbians have like walked back from it.
Interesting.
They're like, we don't want anything
to do
with that.
So it's almost like, which is unfortunate. I guess the reason why scissoring is so popular in lesbian porn made for heterosexual men is that It's visually very stimulating for men, I guess, which is...
It's more visual, which you need in porn.
Reverse cowgirl is fun every now and then, but it's not the ideal position, but it's great for fucking porn when you want to see everything.
Yes, that's exactly... You nailed it. You got it. because fingering is not like a visually appealing thing in porn. You don't, it's not dramatic. No,
the only way that fingering gives you any visual, not visual stimulation, but to actually achieve anything where you see a vagina and a finger is a kind of a not super sexy way to get fingered. You know, it's really like
totally,
like more of a disconnect totally than you could possibly want.
Right. And it sucks because fingering, universally beloved by women. Women want
to
be fingered.
I've had fingering women material, bring back fingering. You know, I used to have a joke about what happened to fingering. You know, like, talk a lot about fucking fingering when you're younger, and then suddenly fingering disappears to the point where when you're 35 and somebody says, I fingered her, it's like the most disgusting thing you could ever say. And it's like, why is that disgusting? It was all important when we were 16. What happened to fingering?
Right. You're so right. And people trivialize it. Like, oh, what are you, like a teenager? No, fingering. Also, there's a debate on my podcast, just to be clear for your listener. I believe fingering can be both internal and external stimulation. I just want to make that clear to everybody in case you think it's only internal. That's not
all hand play around all the erogenous zones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And it is
a big
deal.
I'm a fingering fan.
We should bring it back. Everyone should be fingering.
Big fingering fan.
That's great.
I can't remember.
I'm proud of
you.
You gotta come.
I can't remember my routine about fingering, but I it's actually on one of my specials. I had a whole thing about fingering that, like, oh, you know what it was? My joke was,
I'll go check it out.
The joke was something along the lines of, like, what happened to fingering? Like, fingering used to be like a place you got to, like a stage in your relationship. Like, did you finger her yet? Like, have you got to the fingering stage? And then you get to your 20s and one talks about fingering, like, because fingering is no longer a destination. It's just a stop on the way to where you need to get to. But
fingering is
exactly
the destination.
That's the point. Fingering is the terminus. That is a topic. I'd love to go on your podcast only because I've had other people on the podcast and I've actually asked them Katie Boyle still does the shift, but Katie and I used to do the shift and it was a sex podcast and we had a few gay people on, but it was actually quite hard to get people to be as like descriptive as other people were being on the pod in terms of straight sex.
Oh, we are disgusting. We fully,
but don't
everything.
Which is great. But the problem is that I feel like that's not universal. In fact, I'm not going to mention a name, but I couldn't get one comic who's a good friend of mine. I couldn't get him to open up about, you know, specifics. In fact, he asked me to take a bit out. We were joking around about, he was actually giving blowjob advice, and he asked me to take it out.
Because we've gotten, I don't want to speak to what his
I'm not judging him. I'm only saying that it lends itself to this thing that you were talking about, which is there's still this taboo around it, which is very unfortunate.
It's so taboo. And along with like transitioning as well, we have a lot of trans people on the podcast. We've had Jay McBride. We just had this incredible woman, Jacqueline Moore. We've had Kai West, all these people. And one of the things I love about it, and I'm a cis person, you know what I mean? This is not really my territory, but trans people, you know, like there's so much speculation around their genitals as, you know, cis people were really invasive. You know, you'll hear like hack cis comedians be like, well, you know, have you had the surgery? Is it what's down there? Nah. So like, obviously trans people don't want to talk about this shit because they've been made fun of. And I think it's a similar thing for gay people. I think that, you know, we just like, we're tired of people like, you know, men will constantly, the question we always get is, how do lesbians have sex? How do lesbians have sex? How do lesbians have sex? And you're just like, Jesus fucking Christ, like, you obviously think of how you pleasure a woman. That's like how we have sex. Like, why? It's just so strange.
You should just say the same way you have sex. We stick our fingers in each other's buttholes.
Exactly.
And they go, I don't do that. It's like, well, then you're not doing it right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. If it's so hard for you to imagine, your sex life can probably be a lot better. But it's just mentioned in such a taboo, secret, oh my gosh, what is it type of way. I do think that's another reason the pod works, is because it's like liberating. Like everyone is totally open. We try.
Yeah, I want to have Jay McBride on this podcast. When I talk about having testicular cancer and, you know, having a testicle removed, if she happens to be on after me, she jokes by saying, Des, what a fucking lightweight. He only went halfway. Something to that effect. I can't remember her exact line, but I thought it was very funny. And I don't really know her that well. And I liked the fact that she was like, I'm gonna take this risk. Because she didn't, you know, like she just did it. And then she came up to me afterwards. She was like, is that okay? I was like, I don't give a fuck. It's totally fine.
She's great. I love how on the line she goes with everything. Yeah. Because you expect, like, you know, and I hope I'm the same way. Like, I want to talk about all the edgy material. I want to go up to the line and, you know, I like it when people are like, is this gay girl like a Republican? You know what I mean? Like, I like being, obviously I'm not. I'm like, not at all. But I like making people feel like, what is she about to say? And then it's usually
fine. Oh, that's
fine.
Great. I can't wait to listen to a couple of apps. Well, anyway, all our listeners should listen to. We're having gay sex, right?
Yes.
It came
Thanks for letting me talk about it so much. I didn't mean to do so much.
No, that's great. I kind of forgot that. Okay. I forgot that actually your podcast touches on a topic that I've tried to talk about before, and actually you've covered it. Okay, last question then, and I think that this will be a judgment on your behalf. Do you think that women are more comfortable talking about same-sex stories than gay men are talking about same-sex stories?
Gay men or straight men? You like an experiment?
No. I mean like gay. Let's just leave it in the comedy space. Do you feel like there's more taboo for gay men to talk about their sexual experiences? Like explicit.
I see.
I'm talking about explicit, detailed, like sex podcast type conversations. You can also not know. That's totally fine.
I do think that. I do think you're right. I don't have like data to support this answer, but I do think that like butt stuff makes straight men super uncomfortable. And so they're constantly having to deal with that reaction of ew. 'Cause like I have one joke about gay men at that refers to, it's very tame. I say bum, you put his wee wee in his bum. It's so tame. And but I once had a young man at a comedy show immediately go, oh, like out loud about it. And I do think that there is a stigma, like when it comes to butt stuff with men. In
yeah, and then you often
so
get,
I often that's get probably
these,
something
you
they
often
battle.
Get these like dumb conversations like, yo, if a man wants to be pegged, that's gay. That's just gay. And like I'm always like, well, first of all, if it is just gay, who cares? And secondly, like why does it have to be labeled as a sexual preference? What if, you know, like why does that even matter? Like, I mean, obviously you're getting right to the core of homophobia, but like what is it about gay that's a problem for you?
Right. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is like your prostate is not gay. Your prostate is a prostate. And also I like the argument, like something that I think about when people say that, it's like, okay. So like, okay, something goes in your butt, you're gay now. What about like just receiving oral sex? Like men have mouths. Is that gay? Because your girlfriend also has a mouth, but a boy has a mouth too, so like, is that gay? Like, it's just
that
like
is very
weird.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Plus, you want to put it in your girlfriend's like, butt. You like butts?
Yeah, exactly. Right, you're into butts. So, like, are you gay or is just bottoming? And then you get into the crossover of homosexuality and sexism, where it's like, okay, so you're saying that the feminine receiving penetration is gay. So, like. So there's something wrong with being a woman?
Yeah,
like,
and all,
is that what
yeah.
you're like, where
also,
where are we
gay,
going?
Some
with
gay
this?
Men don't like anything in their butt. They like to put it in somebody else's butt. So are you gay because you're a fucking top?
Right, right, exactly.
Fascinating. I love your pop.
All kinds of nuances.
I just want to live in the We Are Having Gay Sex podcast. It's so easy to talk about things. So I want to use you to talk about the first gay NFL player to come out.
Oh my God, I'm really excited about it. I don't know anything about football, anything, but I do like anybody that like crosses people's wires, like just a hyper masculine sort of private guy coming out. I just can't wait to. I was scrolling. I was so disappointed because everyone was so fucking nice. I was scrolling through the comments, like looking for the homophobia, and I barely found any homophobia. I was like, this is so annoying. I want people to be upset. Like, I want someone to come at him, you know, but I didn't get any of it.
Well, this is the problem. You fight for equality, then you get it. It's pretty fucking boring. Yeah, it's boring when you're not special anymore.
Yeah, it's very boring. Sometimes audiences are too accepting. Like, I'll get up there and I'll do like some gay stereotype about myself, and people go, "Oh no, you know that's not true. Like, you're a great gay person." It's like, I just want a little animosity, because comedy is like foundationally built on hatred. You know what I mean? And
I think conflict is a better word than hatred.
Yeah. Conflict. You're totally right. Conflict and tension and like, you know, I don't believe all these stereotypes and stuff like that, but you can use them as tools to like build jokes and kind of find an interesting perspective. And when people, I don't know, a world of total tolerance. I don't know what we're just jokes about. Like, it'll be like going back in time to when people only did jokes about like airline food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we've moved into like identity jokes, and then we'll lose.
Yeah. But I mean, it really is good. It is good news in that it's, first of all, it's not that surprising. The only thing that's surprising is he's the first active NFL player to come out when it would seem, judging by the reaction, which you've just pointed out, that it was long overdue in that nobody really cares. Like, I don't mean nobody really cares in a negative way, but it's just like, it's not a big deal. Like, why haven't more people come out sooner? In that the atmosphere, I don't think it's perfect. I don't think we live in the most tolerant society, or homophobia has been eradicated, but it's certainly warm enough that it's surprising that this is the first guy.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like the fans definitely, for the most part, are not going to care. In the best way. I think it's different when you're in the locker room. That's where I think he might have, that might like delay someone's coming out.
Yeah.
Because that's like the one place that being gay still kind of matters, is like an environment where a bunch of people are naked. And I'm not saying like it shouldn't, it's not actually like, he's not like looking at other guys. Like, that's so not the case. I mean, maybe he is. Maybe he's getting a little you know, a little peripheral, polite, glance of one of these guys. But like, obviously he's like a professional and like very professional, but there are men that would make some men uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, which I think maybe might be more, is that you're surrounded by all this machismo. And I'd say that any sort of direct homophobia has probably faded over the years, but I'd say probably there wasn't the most welcoming atmosphere for coming out in the locker room, like probably comments and things that are said, or atmosphere that probably makes you think it's best if I just keep this on the down low.
Right. There's no reason for anyone to know. I don't want to draw any attention to myself. And God, what a, just the absolute straightest coming out. He might as well have been like flipping a burger on a grill when he came out. It was just like so straight.
Yeah, I know. And I actually, like, would you believe, I didn't even watch the video. I heard the video on the radio, though, and it was very much like, hey, by the way, guys, just want to let you know I'm gay. You know, I just thought everyone should know. it wasn't that momentous. Yes. The reaction. The reaction.
He was like, anyway.
The reaction was momentous.
Yeah. He's like, can I have the wings now? Anyone got a beer? By the way, I'm gay, but I wanted to go. Anyone got a beer?
That was that joke. What was it, years ago? In like, what movie was that? LA Story or something? I'm pregnant. Can you please pass the turnips or something like that? But yeah, but I mean, I'm not writing jokes for you, But I got to think that there has to be a joke. If I was a lesbian comic,
but I've got.
If I was a lesbian comic, which I'm not, I got to think that there would be a joke like somebody in the WNBA came out as straight or something. I got to think that there's some alternative joke to that.
Yeah. Well, actually, Hannah was just on my podcast and we were joking on the podcast how whenever it was so fucking funny, she was like, whenever I beat any gay athlete, any lesbian athlete, I was always like, fuck yeah. I outran the lesbian. I'm like the straightest straight who ever straighted. I fucking took her down. There's definitely something. I don't know why lesbians are so good at sports, but I mean, I have theories, but. You know, we really dominate the athletic world, you know?
Yeah, well, I assume that there's numerous reasons for that. But I got to think that one of them is that there has been a more open atmosphere to coming out in female sports. They had pioneers.
Yeah.
They had pioneers a lot earlier than men did.
Yes, for sure. And I also think, like, athleticism is, like, a traditionally masculine trait. Like, you associate, you know, like, I think women are, straight women are into, like, taller, more muscly guys than, like, guys are into, like, taller, muscly girls,
yes.
You know? And so I think when you're young and you're, like, internalizing society, if you're gay and men don't really matter to you, as they don't to me, you're just a lot more free to explore the masculine parts of your personality. I think humor, that's why I also think lesbians dominate comedy as well. So many gay women in comedy. And I think it's because funniness, humor is like a male trait. And so we're more free to explore that because we don't have to like make ourselves attractive to men.
Right.
And so I think like women... gay women naturally gravitate to that stuff.
So when you say funniness humor is more like a male trait, you mean the perception is that it's more male, right?
Yes. Yes. I don't actually, for any listener out there that's like, yeah, men are objectively funnier. women with our very small brains, very hard for us to formulate jokes. I actually take testosterone so that I can write my jokes.
Yeah. Testosterone is known for helping the writing. All right. Well, listen, hit the road. Oh, what's your Instagram? Ash Gavs. All right. So thanks to Ashley. Thanks to you guys. It's great to be back. I'm actually sitting on my bed after getting a cortisone shot in my groin. I've had this problem with my groin since the end of like February. Very slow healing. Now, I have a sports hernia as the official diagnosis, which is apparently a controversial diagnosis. But essentially, it's just a tear in my where the groin and the abdomen, where the adductor and the abdominal muscles meet. So just to the right of my penis, I got a cortisone injection, like literally an hour ago. So there's a mixture of numbness and tenderness. It's just a bit of a violated feeling. But I'll give you a progress report on that next week. It's my first cortisone injection, which is really just a sign that you're getting old, especially when you're not a professional athlete. But you know, I want to play some volleyball. I can't play volleyball. It's, you know, these are first world problems, but they are my problems. What am I going to do? So I hope all my Irish listeners are enjoying society opening up a little bit. And I hope all the American listeners are taking advantage of our advanced level of vaccination. Hopefully you live in a place where that exists. If you're somebody who's resisting getting vaccinated, yeah, sure. It's your body, your choice. But you're probably choosing to keep an open mind to certain information and closing your mind to other information, despite your, I guess, keenness to point out that other people need to keep an open mind to whatever anti-vaccination material that you've been reading, but you seem to close your mind to, much more than a century of science of the success of vaccines. You focus, obviously, much more on the limited, but clearly there has been some adverse reactions to vaccines and negative outcomes of vaccine. They are...
deep minority of experiences in human history. Vaccine development has been one of the great scientific advancements, but you're choosing to ignore that to focus on a small amount of negatives, which are, first of all, exaggerated, and they're not really present in this case. Of course, there's a risk. We're accepting the risk, though, because, in my opinion, the positives well outweigh the risks. I appreciate that you're deep in this critical of the vaccine information, and it does feel very real. I don't dismiss that at all. But I will point out that this isn't the first anti-vaccination controversy that I've seen in my life. And in the end, most of the time, the real information wins out. Sometimes it loses early on, but in the end, it wins out. And you're really, in my opinion, fighting a losing battle. So my advice would be get with the program, because areas where the highest amount of vaccinations are happening, they are having the best results, the most open societies. So, you know, think selflessly and get vaccinated. I am aware that some people will, you know, come at me for that, but I really don't care, you know. I've just had it with these people, you know. It's been a while now with these anti-vaxxers coming after me, and I just really, like, I've had it. But, you know, each to their own. So anyway, guys, we'll be back next week. Thank you so much for listening. Actually, speaking of the Patreon, there was some stuff me and Ashley were joking about that I was just like, I don't know if I'm going to put this up. I don't want any of the pushback on this. It was kind of to do with testosterone and controlling testosterone in men. Nothing to do with trans stuff, just literally just kind of joking around about testosterone and how it's been bad for humanity. But, you know, I didn't put it up because I was like, you know, I don't want to deal with anyone coming at me saying anything. So I'm putting it up on the Patreon. It's only like 10 minutes, but I'm just putting it up on the Patreon. There's another little Patreon bonus. So if you're interested in that, go check that out. But listen, guys, you've been so good to stick around after my little sabbatical. And I will talk to you next week with Mark Hayes. See you then. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.